Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. This is issue 74 at this point, which is pretty amazing.
At this point in time and space
in the multiverse. That's where we are. Joined, of course, by the ever fearless short round to my Indiana Jones, Cole. Cole Houston.
You call him Dr. Jones, doll.
That's right. And we are blessed and thankful tonight to be joined by the unmountable Bobby Blakey. Bobby, are you out there?
I am, and I thought I was going to be short round. I was about to be pissed.
No. You're not short round. You're what's her name?
Oh, yeah. You're the Willie Scott.
Nobody cares about her name.
Exactly, Bobby. Remember that.
I got it. I figured it out. I understand now.
Nobody remembers her.
It's all coming together.
Anything Goes. It's my favorite. It's my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
It turned out to be that guy that got shot at the beginning. I'm just going to say your farewell to us. Like, into the great unknown, I go first.
So, tonight we're jumping into a story arc called, what is it called, Cole? You just told me.
It's called I Just Told You the Name of the...
It's called You Jackass. That's what it's called.
Hey, a piece of advice. Nobody else knew. He just told you. If you had just said, hey, what is it called tonight?
I believe in transparency. All right?
We honestly will put our shortcomings and our short rounds right in front of people.
That's right.
Let me be the first to tell you that there's restraining orders for that.
Bobby knows firsthand.
We actually wrote restraining orders on each other, but they said legally that canceled them out.
They also said that you're common law married, so you can't have that.
We are like, virtually common law married.
We're digitally common law married.
So we are actually talking about rethinking the legends.
Nice.
This is a brand new, as promised, brand new story arc. This is Rethinking the Legends, Another You.
So I want to start by saying this is... In keeping with the type of show that we do and what we talked about last week on the show, this is my favorite type of comic book. And Bobby and I were talking about this while Cole was jerking around doing whatever he does.
Yeah, I was watching the movies or something.
Yeah, he was off at the pictures, the talkies. Bobby and I were discussing...
I was off watching a few movies, all Hollywood.
All Hollywood. It's late, guys. Letting you know in advance. It's late.
This is probably one of the latest starting times for this show ever.
And I love it. I love it.
And it's only late to them because y'all are all like old apparently. Because this is the time I start. This is what time I start working every night.
Bobby is the night. Bobby is the saddest Batman ever.
I am the night.
Fourth meal.
I wish I could argue that point.
What the hell? Fifth meal.
I want two chalupas. A caramel empanada. So in keeping with that idea, this is my favorite type of comic book. And the reason being is I really love the idea that a lot of comic books have 50, 60 years of continuity at this point, and the characters are completely established and fairly predictable. You know what's going to happen, but and that's all well and good. But when you take a character out of the status quo, you can do anything with them if you take it out of continuity. So
that's right.
So this story arc is going to be great. I absolutely love it. I'm chomping at the bit to get started on it. So what was your idea for this, Cole, for this particular issue?
Yeah, this particular part, I thought best to lead with one of the oldest versions of the type of comic we're going to be talking about here. And that is what became things like your Elseworlds and your other, you know, originally you would occasionally have the odd story that it wasn't tied into, locked into something that just that broadcast, oh, by the way, this isn't continuity.
Right.
Because there was this feeling that we kind of got it. You know, if you told a story where young Kal-El is rocketed to Earth and lands in Gotham City and the Waynes adopt him, you're like, okay, I think this is like an alternate timeline.
Right.
You didn't have to have an imprint. Like, hey, Mr. Potato Head, this isn't real.
You didn't need to invent a third tier imprint in order to in order for Batman to be found by Mixelplick and become, you know, whatever. And it, that is until Grant Morrison gets a hold of that story that he found as a second tier sizzler in the back of some book that was a Hostess ad, and decides to run with it for 17 issues of Batman.
You know, we need to do a whole show on the Hostess ads.
I think we do. I'm putting it on the list.
When you see the Incredible Hulk fighting an anthropomorphic artichoke named Artichoke, who in turn tries to choke him. That's a whole show by itself.
I'm hankering for a hunk of justice.
I think we need to do a whole show about the sizzler.
I think we need to do a whole show. I think we need to do a whole show from Sizzler.
Let me tell you something. You think it's a joke? Me and my wife, everywhere we go, our whole goal is to find a sizzler. And we found a sizzler in Thailand and ate dinner there.
No! Did you really?
There's a sizzler in Thailand?
We found a sizzler in Thailand, and it was amazing.
There's a sizzler in Thailand?
And I took a picture of it.
Amazing. So this is about the, if you're curious about where all this was headed, this is about the times where you've got your Superman Red Suns, you've got your Batman the Blue, the Gray, and the Black, or the Blue, the Gray, and the Bat, or whatever it was, and other color-themed.
whoa.
I'm talking about Spectrum, not Ray.
Ironically enough, Lee Daniels the Butler comes out next week.
Listen, Cole, I know it's a new year, and we want to take it in a new edgy direction, but we don't need to go straight to race. We can build up to Bobby's Closet whenever you want.
Whoa. That's right. He said we weren't going to talk about that.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Bobby's Closet's off the table.
We're going to talk about the points where they take the familiar and rethink it, retool it, reimagine it, and say, like, you know, I'll go so far as to say that, in a way, Marvel did it first. And a little title called What If?
And you know what? You know what's funny about that book, before you get into your whole thing on it, is that was one of the first things I was introduced to as far as regular comics. You know, I wasn't reading, like, storylines yet. I was just buying whatever was off the rack. And I remember buying two or three What Ifs. I think it was like What If the Punisher killed the Marvel Universe, or type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like, What If Wolverine was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? I think it had Liefeld cover, or Liefeld did the interiors. And I was so confused by comics. I was like, nothing makes any sense. Everything's just all over the place. These people don't know what they're doing. I was like, none of these characters are ever the same. This is ridiculous. And I actually couldn't get into
the title and the setup didn't key you in on any of this.
I clearly did not pay attention to What If. I just read this title of, you know, Wolverine Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, and I'm like,
oh, okay, so you like, thought that was the publisher was What If.
What If.
Yeah, but not even that. I don't even think I noticed for years, because I remember even when I got older, you know, and I already knew about the What Ifs and everything else. I remember seeing some of the covers of stuff that I remembered vividly of being comics I really thought were cool. And then thinking, oh, crap, that was a What If book. <You know>? I didn't remember the story. I just remembered that visual, you know. And when I saw it, I'm like, oh, crap, that was a What If book. And then I started realizing that, you know, so that
Bobby,
was one of the things.
Were you the target audience for Image?
I was. And let me tell you something. I love them.
I love the fact that Image didn't need to have like an Elseworlds or a What If, because nobody knew what the hell was going on at any given time with their books anyway.
I knew what was going on in every book, sir, so you just need to calm it down.
Did it make sense?
It did make sense if you had half of a brain, not a full brain. You had to have half of a brain.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, if you had a full brain, you're out of luck.
Yeah. And luckily, the books came out so far apart, you had time to figure it out. Oh,
that's true. That was their angle. So basically what we want to talk about is, and What If, I bring that title up mainly because, in a sense, that's what Elseworlds and other things like that were. more often than not, What If just simply concentrated on, let's just say, you know, what if Peter Parker didn't get bitten by a radioactive spider? Probably the most boring issue of the series, because it was just basically Peter Parker getting beaten up at school every day.
Yeah. How you could get that past him and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take what's interesting about the character. We're going to take it away and let's just make him a kid. Go.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
that's a good choice.
Yeah. That was actually known as Archie.
Yes.
That was What If Spider-Man didn't get, you know, Peter Parker didn't become Spider-Man. He'd be Archie.
It would be the most.
Jughead would go down and have a burger and go hang out with Reggie and Veronica and Betty, and there would be the weird little trysts and things. And frankly, that Archie is proof of concept that was viable.
And why are we talking about Archie again?
75 years.
You and your damn Archies recently. What's going on with that? Cole's been on this Archie kick for about three issues. I keep seeing
Jughead's Double Digest at the grocery store line. It brings back memories of comics I never read.
You know what's... If we're going to... Comics that you invented in your mind based on covers that you saw.
Those are the best kind, the ones you've never actually read, but you have a lot of opinions on.
And that's what this show is going to be about. I'm familiar with a lot of the titles we'll be talking about, but I can't say that I've read most of them.
But if we're going to talk about What If, there's a companion comic that I liked as much as What If that went along those same lines, which was What The?
Oh, yes.
I love that book, too.
Those were great because they were still hosted by The Watcher, which, by the way, that was the coolest thing about What If comics. You could do whichever one you were reading. And I remember the What If Wolverine was an Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. I remember the What If, the Punisher. There was one that was What If Elektra wasn't killed, which the great thing about What Ifs was they were all made obsolete in continuity. Because virtually everything that happened in a What If comic came to life for real, like in Marvel's universe. Like, well, Elektra wasn't killed? Guess what? She wasn't. What if... There was one about Daredevil that I'm trying to remember that came true, too.
What if Daredevil wasn't a lawyer?
Maybe.
Because that would change everything.
But there was some really cool What If. Now I gotta look up some What Ifs.
But we need to, you know, really start to explore what the core of the Another You is about, is things like Superman Red Son is a great example. Where somebody said, you know, why don't we do a miniseries that explores Kal-El landing in the Soviet bloc?
Right.
Instead of America. How much different a scenario does that create? And the answer is a tremendously different scenario.
Well,
and it gives you, I mean, it was the sort of thing I think everybody'd always thought about, but never really touched on. You know, nobody had ever, there was no good way to do that. And then somebody decided, well, hey, why don't we do this Elseworlds? We can do whatever the hell we want.
Well, the cool thing about the Elseworlds and the What Ifs and whatever else is they're the bullpen conversations. They're the conversations that we've all had. You know, what if there was no Hulk? What if Bruce Banner made it out? You know, what if he saved everybody and made it out? What if, you know, these are the conversations we all have. You know, what would be the coolest story that you could do? What would be the coolest origin story for Superman? What if Superman, you know, ended up in China? Or what if, you know, what if Batman's parents weren't killed? What if, you know, like all of the stories like that, that we all sit around and discuss as comic book fans, we were able to see actually brought to life.
Absolutely, and it basically, and the other trick you can do is, rather than just simply juxtaposing the nature of a character, the history of a character, the other cool trick is, let's take the familiar and take it out of time. That was the other big trick, like Gotham by Gaslight, where you have a you know, Victorian era Batman running around trying to track down Jack the Ripper.
Right.
That was a good
book. Or Marvel, to cite a Marvel example, was it 1602?
1602 was great. Neil Gaiman wrote it, and that was...
Yeah, where you, you basically take the whole concept of the Avengers, and you put it into a time when you really have to work hard to make all the characters happen. And the one that got way past me, got way past most people, and this was one of those things where it was, you know, thank goodness we were in the internet age by then, because you could find out how wrong you were. And that was, of course, the whole, how do you pry bar a Captain America into 1602?
They did a really super good job of that.
Exactly. And the way you you have this...
We all right over there? Are we losing people?
I think Cole passed out.
Oh, okay. I thought we were losing Bobby for a second. What were you saying?
No. Oh, I was going to say, is it similar to the whole what if Stan Lee created the DC universe?
Yeah, I wish you hadn't mentioned that.
Everybody wishes that. Nobody had ever mentioned
just
that.
Just wait till our story arc on Challenge of the Super fails for that one.
Yes, indeed. That's an upcoming arc.
That would definitely
that certainly
needs
fodder
to be in there.
For the, that's grist for the mill on that one. But, you know, 1602, what that did for your Captain America character. Well, I think we're getting some serious feedback here.
We are.
Yep.
Is that any better?
That's much. No.
It's coming. Is it coming from you, Cole?
I don't know. Let me try something.
Is your pacemaker kicking in?
How's that?
It sounds good.
Okay, that's better. Sorry about that. Okay. What you've got with the 1602 for their Captain America, you have a Native American character.
Right.
Called Rojas. Which snuck right past me that was a play on Steve Rogers.
Right.
And what you got there was basically, you know, this is effectively pre-America, but, you know, he was the representing the Americas, as it were.
And they did a really cool, like, thing where he sort of remember, like, if I remember right, he was the only one that had some kind of vague recollection or could see through the fact that it was...
Not right.
Yeah, that it was an alternate reality. Like, I need to go back and read that because it was really good. The Tony Stark, Da Vinci-like inventor, it was all really well done. It was exactly what I would expect from somebody like Gaiman. It was so
good.
That's
true, and it was one of the most, you know, well thought out juxtapositions. Because it took those characters and found ways to make it make sense. You know, how do you bring Captain America? How do you bring Spider-Man into these things? And far more satisfying than what was the one that Alex Ross's disjointed
Marvels? That one?
No. The disjointed thing where it was Earth-X.
Earth-X.
With the
spiders,
Captain
America, man,
isn't that the one that Captain America wearing like a flag and his face was all stuffed up and he was all just ripped looking?
Beat up old ripped guy who draped a flag around what was left of his strangely half decrepit, half godlike body, but the whole thing was just like you pick up the first few issues and you couldn't connect one to the next.
Right.
There was no defining. There was literally nothing you could. It was like you're searching for a storyline of some kind, and it's just not there.
Well, didn't that come after Kingdom Come, and it was really just Marvel trying to piggyback that success?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, what they did was say, you know, whatever you want to, however you want to rethink these characters, just go nuts, do whatever you want. And I think in many ways, and you know, I'm probably going to get some flack for this, but I think it, what it is saying, Alex Ross, you're a damned fine artist. And as a writer, you're a damn fine artist.
Well, you know what? I think, and if you notice with a lot of his stuff, and even with Kingdom Come, is he seemed to, he made them so convoluted and all over the place that I honestly don't think some people even realize he was a bad writer. Because they
He didn't write Kingdom Come, though. So
no, I know, but I'm just saying.
I have to slap you down on that one, mister.
No. I don't mean in directly with Kingdom Come, but I'm saying because of the success of that, they started reading, looking at his other stuff, and they were so enamored by just his art that I don't think you really noticed. That, and the stories were so all over the place and made little to no sense that he was just like, everybody's like, oh, it's pretty colors, you know?
Exactly. And well, you know, and that's the closest he ever came to Image.
Wow.
It was all about the art.
I'm not even going to – that. As an artist, I am becoming insulted by you, sir.
Well, the thing is, we've had this discussion many times where we've talked about the fact that there are two Alex Rosses. There's the really good art Alex Ross. There's the Kingdom Come Alex Ross. And then there's the I'm going to phone it in Dynamite Alex Ross.
Oh wow!
It's true. I'm sorry. I love Alex Ross. There are many times where Alex Ross can do no wrong in my eyes as an artist. Like Kingdom Come, God, I read it and I look at it and I look at those panels, and every time I look at it, it's like Cole with Watchmen. Every time I look at it, there's something else new to discover. There's something else to see. There's something else to uncover. If you look at the panels where they're in what is essentially Warriors, and I forget what they've renamed it, and we talked about it in the food issue, whatever the restaurant is.
Oh, the Planet Krypton.
Planet Krypton. I don't care how many times you look at it, he has snuck something else in there that you can find some little Easter egg. But then you get into stuff that he's done for other publishers or when he gets a monthly title. For a while, it gets to a point where you're like, the art style, we get what you're trying to do, but you don't do well with a deadline.
I am going to actually defend him as an artist, understanding his plight, if you will.
This is what happens when we have artists on the show.
Exactly. No,
I thought we agreed never to have artists on the show again.
But that's why you still have me on. the thing that, and I've noticed this with a lot of them, and I think that, I hold artists accountable for it because I think, you know, I agree with you completely that, you know, he gets into some other books. Some of them, they're given a ridiculous deadline. Some of them, there's no passion to the project. And I think when they're taking it as just a paycheck, which most likely most of that stuff was, he doesn't deliver his work that he's really known for with Kingdom Come that made him big because now he's coasting on his fame. And just getting the paycheck, and I think that's bad for the artist because your fans, like you said, are expecting something specific, and then you get kind of half-ass, but he knows you're going to keep coming back, you know, and I think as an artist, they shouldn't, I know people need the money, we all need the money, but I don't think you should be, if you're going to take the money, I think they need to put their same passion into all the artwork, but also, if he's only being paid like half of what Marvel paid him or given control, that could be like, okay, well, you're only paying me this much. This is the art you're getting. You know,
you're going to get exactly what you pay for.
I don't know
if any of that's true with him, but I know a lot of artists that you see them drawing in a convention and they're doing a commission and they do these super detailed, elaborate, badass sketches. And then you see him draw a monthly book and it's kind of haphazard. It's not as detailed. It kind of seems thrown together. You know, sometimes that's their speed when they need to get deadlines out. They can't draw the same as if they were given, hey, you have a year to complete this full series.
That's a good point.
But I don't think I know we're caveating pretty hardcore right now.
No, you don't think.
But Bobby, you're a sweet kid. I don't blame him for this. Okay, I just don't think his his momentum, I don't, and his pacing isn't right for a monthly book, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Then I would actually, you know, taking that side of it, then I do blame him, because he should know his limitations to doing that kind of thing, because you get some of these guys that are strictly cover artists, and they're strictly cover artists for a reason.
Well, you get caught up in that. All of a sudden you do, because what did he do before Kingdom Come? Did he do Astro City? What did he do?
No, actually he, prior to Kingdom Come, there was, it seemed like there was something at Marvel or somebody had done, but the main thing is he really hadn't done anything full scale. He'd done some kind of sci-fi thing for Marvel.
Right.
And that's kind of what got their attention. And then I think he just sort of like, they hid him away somewhere until Kingdom Come was ready to go to press.
But you get caught up in that buzz. All of a sudden you've done Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
And you're, how old was he when he did Kingdom Come? Because he wasn't young.
Well, they get lost in their own hype. But the problem is that's when it's up to you to still know your limitations. If you can't deliver what you've now become known for, you know, you take somebody like Jim Lee. Jim Lee's monthly book is just as good as most Jim Lee's covers.
Right.
The guy can deliver both sides. If you know I deliver a cover and it looks like Kingdom Come, I deliver a book and it doesn't, there's an issue. And
right.
You as an artist have to understand that, and it's nobody's fault but him.
All right. All right, guys.
We
should probably start the show at some point.
this is the fodder for a whole other episode, I think. So.
It is. Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly.
So we are definitely going to re-explore this, but
I'm busy that day.
So I've got a question.
He's busy doing some good art.
That's right.
Mentally.
So we've talked about, you know, What If, and we've talked a little bit about Elseworlds and what they are. I want to start here. I have a feeling this issue is going to go long, and we haven't really had a go long issue in a while, so I'm okay with it. Bobby, what's your favorite instance of an alternate reality like this?
When I started, you know, once I realized What Ifs were fake, and and I got on the bandwagon of normal comics and how they work. I actually, one of my big things was I was a huge, huge Batman fan. My problem is I didn't want to get into the monthly books because there were so many different ones. I couldn't keep up because I was so far behind. So I got into the Elseworlds Batman books heavy. I mean, though, I bought every Elseworlds book Batman that came out. And my favorites were the Vampire Trilogy, the Kelly Jones, Doug, I don't know how to say his last name, Monek or Monike, whatever his name is.
Right.
Which I always still forget the name of. It's like Red Rain and Blood Mist. I don't remember what the other one is. Is it Reign of Terror? No. I don't remember. No. Anyway, but the
yeah, I know where you're coming from. Red Rain was the catalyst, essentially.
Red Rain was my favorite Prince album.
Okay, we'll let you go.
Nothing,
with that.
Just okay. Dead
that
silence.
Was
there was crickets, literally crickets there.
I knew where you were headed. I just wasn't going to justify it.
Oh, come on.
I wasn't either. I wasn't going to give a Jonathan a shout out so you could have a Prince reference. But no, it was the Red Rain, Bloodstorm, and Crimson Mist.
Right.
Those books, and not all of them were that great. Red Rain I thought was awesome, but I think it's the whole Kelly Jones stuff, because he did such unique stuff with it, really sucked me in, and I was really bought into that book. I was obsessed with that whole series for a long time.
Well, right on. Cole, what about you? What is your favorite kind of alternate telling?
Wow. I have to say that I've yet to track it down, but it did eventually get published, but it was the, what was it, like Elseworlds Finest or something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, it was the 80-page giant, the Elseworlds 80-page giant.
Okay.
Which was banned in the U.S. when DC woke up the day it was leaving the printer and realized that it had, like, an Elseworlds story of the Superman's babysitter.
Okay.
Like infant Clark's babysitter, like getting stoned and leaving him in the microwave or something.
What?
Now I want to read that book.
Whoa, what now?
Yeah, look for Elseworlds 80-page giant. It did eventually get released a few years later when they decided, you know, we got a little Spielberg walkie-talkie there. Probably not that bad. And the best, I think the one that killed it, then where I first heard about it, was the Batman in the Garden of Eden, where Adam was Batman.
Oof! This is all in the Elseworlds 80-page giant.
This is in the Elseworlds 80-page giant. In fact, the flavor art for this episode will be the scene of Bat Adam fighting the Joker serpent.
No.
No, I have to ask: was Robin the Leaf?
Oof!
Oh wow! Wow, that's why it got banned.
You're right.
I know my next art project.
No, Robin was not the Leaf.
I'm not near as interested.
But yeah, it was, I don't even know if it went past this, the splash page that was done, where it's, you know, the Batman wearing only a cape and cowl and nothing else. His little bat being strategically covered by the Joker serpent that he's fighting.
Oh.
And Eve speculating that Adam is never around when Batman shows up. And, you know, clearly the concept is, you know, how ridiculous would it be when only two people exist in the entire world? And yet a third person shows up from time to time, and one of those two people can't put the equation together.
You know what? Okay, so here's something amazing about this. I'm all over Wikipedia looking for information on Superman's babysitter. And there are no stories about the actual content, the story, you know, like what actually happens. But Kyle Baker wrote it. Okay, and drew it for that matter. It appears to be very cartoony, like it.
Yes, yeah, very deliberately so.
And Kyle Baker won an Eisner Award for it.
Ha! Well, is it okay? Now, hold on, back up a little bit. I'm sorry. Did I hear you right that he said that he's disguised, that she doesn't understand he's Adam?
Yeah, because he's wearing a bat cape and cowl.
So basically, it's like the Mighty Mitor.
Yes, exactly. I thought of that. It's exactly like the Mighty Mitor.
It's like he's a caveman, and nobody can figure out that guy put a little hood on, and that's it.
The thing about it is, there were more than like two people in the Mighty Mitor.
Barely. They all.
Yeah. There were like seven.
And they all hung out with his family. It's like, when were they not going to realize? Mitor was still with the same family all the time.
And of course, they never could figure out that that one guy that Ugg or whatever his name was never.
Ugg.
This is amazing. Like, how did I not know? I've seen the book, The 80-Page Giant, but how did I not know that this stuff was in it? Like,
because you looked at it and said, this looks stupid, I'm not looking at this.
I did. That's exactly what happened. Now I got to go find this thing.
Lord.
But then you can go the opposite direction from, like, you know, what was the best? I guess we need to find out what yours is.
Oh, mine? Before
yeah.
Oh, geez. I don't even.
That's how it works.
Now it's the 80-page giant.
Right. Yeah. I'm backing off of whatever I was thinking. I really liked the, which one was it? It was a JLA. It was a JLA one, where it was World War I, and I'm trying to remember.
Okay, yes.
Liberty Files. It was called JLA Liberty Files. It was World War II. It wasn't World War I, but that's the one. I picked it up on a lark, and it was one of those prestige format books. Because it was only, I think it only ran two or three issues, but they had released it as a prestige format. And that one was super cool. I really liked that because it had Batman, Dr. Midnight, and Hourman, which is a weird. It was a great combination because you had no superpowers really, it was just kind of like, you know, three guys punching it up at the, you know, for World War II, like you know, super secret spy mission stuff with guys in masks and goggles. That was really cool. I really liked that one a lot. But as
and
far as
go ahead. The thing about it is, what sorry, go ahead.
No, I was that one was my favorite. I also really liked Red Sun, which is a cop out. And the Batman mask was cool, where it was the Phantom of the Opera takeoff.
Okay,
that was,
and that's a good lead in to one of the things I was going to get at is then you got, especially at DC, a kind of a glut. Because then all of a sudden they had tested the waters, especially with some various Batman titles. And the next thing you know, it's like, you know, every potential iteration was right. going to be explored.
Right.
Because you got like Batman Holy Terror. You got Batman the Blue, the Gray, and the Bat. You got, you know, the Superman Cal. You got... Or it's like Arthurian Superman.
Right.
You have the aforementioned Gotham by Gaslight. And some of the worst were when they were trying to just like force the Legion or the Justice League into every conceivable. You had a
yeah.
sword and sorcery fantasy League of Justice.
Yeah, yeah.
I honestly think that with as ridiculous as some of those were, the only ones that seemed to ever work for me anyway were the Batman ones, because they always seemed to try to make it with the lineage of the Wayne family.
Yeah.
So they always
tried
to...
That's true.
Even though this is not real, it still could be part of the whole stuff and never have to change anything because it was just an ancestor. Where everything else, they seemed to just throw them, look, we're at the Phantom of the Opera, and go.
Exactly. See, for me, the worst was the Kingdom. Do you remember the Kingdom?
Yes.
Which was the kind of the follow-up to Kingdom Come. Because you know what you want to do when you take this amazing standalone book that explores what happens when power corrupts absolutely, and you've got nuclear bombs and Superman and Magog destroying half of the, you know, yeah, four states. And
yeah, it's just like wholesale destruction.
Right, you want to follow it up with a kitschy little book about planet Krypton. Like, no, just let it stand on its own. It was amazing. Like, just, you don't need to follow it up with some half-assical series of books to monetize this work of art that you've done. It's,
well, you know, eventually DC's going to do that to everything.
Like The Watchmen?
That's where I was headed. It was before Watchmen, which doesn't really count for this storyline, but may or may not be fodder for Challenge of the Super Fails.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a few of those.
You know, one of the other issues is that I always got confused on sometimes, too, because, you know, especially with a lot of these, like I was saying with the Batman stuff, like how it could be part of the continuity. There's some stuff that it comes out that's clearly an Elseworlds book, but then they try to convince you, well, it's not actually an Elseworlds book, but it's not within the continuity.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about was what happens when what they release is either so good, so poignant, or somebody gets their hands on it, Marvel and DC, and makes it continuity, writes it into continuity, because it's happened a lot.
Well,
Well,
you have different variations of that depending on where they're going. Like we were talking about before the show, that Digital Justice book.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a horrible, horrible book, but it was kind of, at the time, it was kind of cool because it was different, you know, but it's not considered an Elseworlds book.
Right.
It's considered, you know, out of normal continuity, has nothing to do with it's Gordon's grandson or something, some crap, and becoming Batman is some Chinese guy that's Robin, and... But they're saying, but it's not an Elseworlds book. But yes, it is an Elseworlds book. You're doing something completely different. You know, but then you have, like, even currently they're doing the Damian, Son of the Batman.
Yep. That's what I was just going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, technically could still be within continuity if they bring Damian back.
Well, yeah, and they're going to. You know they're going to.
Oh, yeah. They
after everybody threw a fit about it. Like, I thought that was the most brilliant move to kill him and I think he was a brilliant character.
I think it was the same thing that happened because a lot of people got confused. There's a lot of crossover in every aspect of fandom.
Right.
And a lot of people got confused when Damian Wayne gets killed and then Brian Griffin gets killed. And there's a lot of crossover uproar as a result.
I love that anybody actually bought into the Brian Griffin being killed.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is Son of Bat came out as part of the Kingdom, which was, in my opinion, the only redeemable part of the Kingdom. And it followed Talia and Bruce's kid as he was a killer in the book, but he was almost like Dexter, you know, where he was killing the bad guys, like a vigilante or like the Punisher. And that was really cool. And then all of a sudden, Damian Wayne shows up as the son of Batman and Talia al Ghul. And you're like, because we talked about that, Cole. I forget what issue yes. it was in. And you're like, wait a second. This rings familiar. But another big example of that is the Ultimates over on Marvel's side.
Oh, that's a good example. I was casting about for Marvel stuff, and I don't know how I missed the Ultimates. Yes.
Well, I mean, then there's two ways you can go with it. Number one being, Bobby, and you'll have to help me out on this, Ultimate Spider-Man making the jump to the regular 616 continuity.
Yeah. You know what? I actually didn't... I know what you're talking about. I remember when all that went down. But I actually avoided all the Ultimate crap. Not because I thought it was bad, but I was like, no, I just can't do this anymore. Well, I was like, I can't keep different realities. And
exactly.
It's too hard to keep up with.
The Ultimates was somewhere dead center between brilliance and cash grab.
Right.
Because it was a blatant attempt. And I think, you know, they went so far as to blatantly say as much to capture a new audience.
Uh-huh. They did.
By just retooling everything.
Well, that was kind of their you know, the cash grab, like you said, but it's their way of, it's basically what Elseworlds books have always been. Of, I'm tired of the characters the way they are, but we can't mess with them because people will be pissed off. So right. Let's do something different. That didn't work. We were just kidding.
And I think they really pushed the envelope a little too far with when the Ultimates Alpha Flight, where Northstar wasn't gay.
Right. You gotta.
He was just perfectly straight.
Well, you know, one of the things, you know, going into
I just seen a bit of pandering, especially because they had all those ads for Chick-fil-A.
I'm good.
Wow.
I have tears. I'm not laughing out loud as hard as I'm laughing on the inside right now. I've got tears coming out of my eyes.
You know what? That wasn't getting me as hard until he added the Chick-fil-A.
Right.
That was awesome. But, you know, DC went back, you know, and I don't know if either one of you read these, but, you know, they haven't done a lot of the Elseworlds stuff for a while, you know, random miniseries, something like this. But they came back with their Earth One books.
Uh-huh.
And they were awesome with Superman and Batman, but they announced this entire line of them. And after Earth 1, 2, whatever the hell, whatever number you call it or however it's labeled, I haven't seen one since.
Right.
That's good.
Because the last one was 2012. I think there was supposed to be a Wonder Woman that was supposed to be coming out. I think May or sometime this, but then I think it's now pushed to 2014. There was supposed to be a second Batman that's now pushed out to 2014. So it's like, it makes you kind of wonder, you know, does anybody buying into this crap anymore?
Yeah. I just don't think it was presented right.
Yeah. I didn't, only reason these are one of those, I'm perfectly honest. I had no idea what they were. They sent them to me when I was doing reviews and they sent me volume 2 of Superman, and I'm like, well, can you send me volume 1? Because I have no idea what's going on. I read them, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is just a new universe they're making. This has nothing to do
right.
with any Elseworlds books, and they're trying to just create some – this is the Ultimates for DC.
But and the problem with that is DC just did an Elseworlds books called Flashpoint, relaunched their entire, you know, their entire corporate structure when it came to comic books, and now you're doing this less than a year later? Like, guys.
It was really weird, but at the same time, I have to give them credit because the books are awesome.
Right.
So it's like, okay, if you want to do one or two and pace them out 3 years apart, then if you can keep good ones, I'm all for it.
All right, I got to throw this out there. We're gonna break away from Marvel and DC at this point. There was a series of books, gentlemen, called Star Wars Infinities.
Oh. Okay.
Are you with me?
You're going to tear that wound open.
I am opening that wound. It is an alternate reality comic book.
That's a good point, and another version of a kind of another you. Yeah, that one is. I tried. I felt I owed something to my fraternity.
You're right. Right.
And I tried,
Bobby.
I really, honestly did.
I can honestly say,
I can say.
I knew of it. At the time, I could not get into any Star Wars comic book. I thought they were all boring and lame. And I was like, I didn't care.
And
I didn't
get into that more probably in another time, another place or something like that, where we actually talk about, you know, the speculative. Exactly. The speculative nature of these things, you know, what do they change and what happens when you change them? Cole, what other ones can you think of?
I remember there being, you know, it was, like I said, one of the things that tended to happen was, let's just throw everybody into, you know, let's do Superman in feudal Japan. Let's do the Justice League of the Wild West. Let's do, you know, it's like, it was like Classics Illustrated and DC Comics collided.
You know what?
I was just expecting James Fenimore Cooper's Last of the Bat-Hekans or something.
I wish that was a thing.
I didn't necessarily have so much of a problem when they would do stuff like that, when they would just randomly throw characters into that universe, because sometimes it was a clever idea to look at it. But it was like nobody really thought it through. There was no research done. There was no, they're like, oh yeah, you know, like the Phantom of the Opera. We know the idea of the Phantom, so let's have Batman play the piano. And he's wearing half a mask, you know.
Right. He's gonna live in a theater, and
let's have Batman Houdini.
Exactly.
Was that even something to pursue?
That happened. Yes,
it did happen.
But you know, it's I get it. From a pitch meeting, I can get it from talking about it and saying, dude, Houdini escaped from everything. That would explain why Batman always gets away. Let's make him and connect it. The problem is, again, I don't think everybody really ever thought it through. I think they just said, this is a good idea. Hey, you draw it, you write it.
Right. And well, like, you know, it becomes something else when the Batman Houdini book goes from, you know, it'd be really cool if Houdini had to help train Batman how to escape this thing because he knew that the Joker was planning to put him in this, you know, water tank. You know, that would be a really cool book. Like, Batman finds these plans by the Joker and goes to Houdini for help for how to escape. That would be a really cool Elseworlds book, right? But that's not sexy enough.
Yeah, but
child-stealing vampires. Let's go that route.
Yeah, but then when you start talking about Batman teaming up, too, a lot of those went horribly wrong. I mean, you have the Claws of the Catwoman, where Batman, you know, a 30s Batman teamed up with Tarzan.
Oh, that's right.
African cat cult, whatever, to stop, what is a two-faced mercenary named Finnegan Dent. It's like, really? It's like, I would rather have been Batman was Tarzan than have
right
show up to team up with Tarzan, because, you know, Tarzan's always looking for a friend.
Yeah, I would almost rather see, like, you know, the Waynes get stranded on a remote African shore and infant Bruce is raised by the great apes.
As portrayed by Christopher Lambier.
Please no.
Blind is, well, he is.
Apparently
wait
like
joke.
Some sort of African bats that happened to me.
Wait for the joke. Well, it could be portrayed by Christopher Lambert because he's blind as a...
Okay.
There you go. There it is.
Yeah. Is he blind now? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was going. He's been going blind for a long time. Which
well,
is
now,
what?
Let's have a moment of silence for his blindness.
Well,
and
he's
enough of that.
Actually, I think we should just close
blind
our eyes
at this point.
But see, there was other times where some of those, like those team ups, were they were entertaining because they were so ridiculous.
Right.
There's other times that they had such a good idea. You know, when you like make Batman become the Green Lantern. And there's such an idea there that they just don't go with. It was like everything was masked. Most of it was so half-assed.
Well, I think a lot of it was just forced. It's like, okay, here, you write this story.
Right.
And it's like, why? Because we said so, because this is what we're doing. And DC got so full of it that one year they devoted the annuals across the board to Elseworlds. So everybody was forced into Elseworlds for their annuals. And I'm trying to track down what year that was, but I just remember how just sickening. It just, everything seemed so terribly forced. Because
it was 96,
like,
man.
96.
It was the Legion, it was Legends of the Dead Earth.
Ah.
Is what it was called.
And it was just like everybody had to have an Elseworlds version.
Well, see, and I know it became, you know, it became a battle of the ridiculousness at some point. You know, there's people sitting there and they get the announcement that, you know, the Batman Nosferatu is coming out. So, you know, Marvel's thinking, okay, what do we got to do? Wolverine, ballerina, you know? And they're trying to make all these books that make no sense, and it stopped being clever, it stopped being creative. And then right when you start losing all interest, they throw something new out there where it's something like, you know, the Superman speeding bullets when Kal-El's raised by the Waynes instead, you know,
right.
which
and
is...
And that pissed me off because I was writing, in my opinion, a better version of that same scenario.
Of course you were.
And then they rushed their version out.
Their spies, their industrial spies got to you.
That's right, as they often do.
If it makes you feel any better, I was writing a variation of The Incredibles years before that movie ever came out.
And that doesn't surprise me.
I wrote Harry Crumb a month before Harry Crumb was born, so you can take whatever you want from that.
We're going to move on because you're ridiculous. Now,
I'm the one that's ridiculous.
But you know what? Some of the other ones that kind of got me is when they started making, you know, like when you were talking about the kingdom, when they started trying to do all the, like the characters, you know, their offsprings and trying to make new books out of them. But then again, they try to play them off like they're not Elseworlds books coming from an Elseworlds book.
Right.
You know, and then trying to make everybody believe, no, it's okay. It's not really Elseworlds, but it's part of Kingdom Come, or it's part of this, but it's not Elseworlds.
Well, that's...
You know, and then idiots like ourselves buy into it, and we're like, oh, okay, well, then I'll read it then.
Well, that's...
And then we're like, years later, we're like, what the hell?
That's the weird thing that happened with Kingdom Come, is it came out as an Elseworlds book.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, DC started gearing themselves towards making that the future.
Because all the Elseworlds books before that were crappy.
Right.
Kingdom Come comes out and like, whoa, wait, we got a good one.
Right, let's use it. So all of a sudden, it went from being, oh no, this is completely and totally outside of everything. This is just a tale of absolute power corrupting absolutely, and what happens when the gods among us, you know, decide to recap, yeah, blah blah blah. Into no. This is the future. This is what's going to happen unless somebody stops it.
You know what happened? Alex Ross, they'd already said, okay, it's time for you to go. He was leaving. They realized it was him. They're like, whoa, wait, come here.
don't leave, please.
They like you. We're going to make this part of something like we planned. It's like, come here.
Exactly. I call it the J. Michael Straczynski effect.
Yeah, they're going to be like, you're going to expand this universe with the next one. And we need a son. Let's see it. How about the son of Plastic Man? Because anybody gives a shit.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Offspring. But, what was he called?
Yeah, Offspring. Yeah.
Oh.
But you mentioned Straczynski, and that brings up another point about how this works. And there's a different approach that you can take when, you know, altering, juxtaposing, taking them out of the world you know or the character you know. And that's the blatant ripoff.
Okay.
And this is the purview, the chief offender, public enemy number one, you know, in this particular realm is Marvel Comics, especially up to about 10 or 12 years ago.
I'm waiting.
What I'm talking about here is things like Straczynski actually wrote what I considered, at least early on into this series, probably the best Justice League of America story ever written.
Okay.
And it was called Supreme Power. And it was literally another U version, a different take on the Squadron Supreme, who were a ripoff of the Justice League. So therefore, you have both a combination. You have the ripoff effect many years later being an Elseworlds effect.
See, I honestly thought you were fixing to head over to the Fighting American.
Oh, okay. Which I still have signed somewhere in this apartment.
I still have them all signed. I have with the one where
I think everybody got one of those. Just you have collect comics here. Have a Fighting American sign.
I have to admit this because it's like being an alcoholic. Not only do I have the first one, I have the entire run of every time it came out.
Oh my god! How many covers do you have?
Probably all of them.
So all nine? I think there were nine covers of each issue. Oh, that was horrible.
But the ripoff effect is Marvel did this twice in a big way and held fast to them both. And that is the Squadron Supreme, of course, which is a blatant ripoff of the Justice League.
Okay.
And then you had the Imperial Guard of Shi'ar.
Ah.
Which was a little less obvious until you got, like, say, the Marvel Universe comic that showed you the entire lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And with very few exceptions, it's just a character-for-character analog. Right down to the point where you have a chameleon boy. You have you have everything short of a legion of substitute Imperial Guard of CR. But, you know, your principal characters, I think one of the ways that it becomes less obvious is their Superboy is Guardian. So they're taking more of the Superman than Superboy approach.
Okay.
But after that, character for character, power for power, it's just, you know, it's like the Elseworlds version. Except that it's, you know, you want, what if Stan Lee created the Marvel Universe? You've already got it. Stan Lee created the DC Universe,
right?
You already had it over at Marvel. Somebody else, Mark Grunwald or somebody's, you know, rips off DC in a big way. And then they contend, oh, no, that's a tribute.
Right.
And all I'm thinking is, it's like Guy Caballero. It's not really a spin-off. It's more of a rip-off.
Is that similar to like Zorro the Gay Blade?
Oh, I missed that movie. That was a great movie.
It was nothing like that.
Let's look. I just wanted to bring that up because
you just wanted to say Zorro the Gay Blade.
Talk about it enough anymore.
All right. We're gonna wrap this up. I think we've done it justice, guys. I think we have. There's a lot of ground to cover, and we're going to keep covering it over the next four issues. I think the first one was good. I think the first one, Bobby.
I think we did very well.
Bobby, do you have any closing arguments tonight?
Nothing that would probably do anything but incriminate me in some way.
We love to hear it. Incriminate yourself.
No, I think you know that is as much as we mock and ridicule and make fun of and are silly as they are, I think on the flip side, I think the Elseworlds book are easily some of the most creative books that have ever come out because of the directions they go. Most of them aren't good. but they at least they took a chance to try to do something that gives you something instead of the to break up the monotony. It's like having that one episode that was your clip show in a series to take you out of the normal storyline, you know?
Clip show? What?
What?
That's right.
That requires a lack of laziness that Cole and I do not possess.
Exactly. Right. So I miss the Elseworlds. I dug them, I think. And, of course, from my standpoint, that was like my Batman universe were all Elseworlds books because I didn't read the standard books. I read everything else. You know, and so plus they created some of the most crazy action figures to get released.
That's true. That is awesome. You're right.
When you can buy Batman looking like Zorro on a horse with a whip.
That was an amazing action figure.
It's like it's all ridiculous and awesome all at once.
Right.
You know what's funny about that particular action figure, too, is that every now and again, I've literally every once in a while, somebody will say, overhear somebody talking about seeing something at a convention or a comic shop or something like that. They'll encounter that figure somewhere.
Right.
And they'll be like, well, they had this Batman on a horse with a whip. Batman doesn't ride a horse. And somebody mistook that for, I kid you not, someone actually said, no, that's from The Dark Knight Returns.
Because that's a horse.
Yeah, I mean,
you obviously are out of touch.
It is one of the most iconic action figures I've ever seen. Saying that, I can picture it exactly. The box art, the box, the figure, all of it. Just
the
right
best
there.
Part about that figure was he. You take him off that horse, and he's standing bow-legged.
Heck yeah.
You know, and he couldn't stand up, but he's standing there like he had, like, the bad case of the jock itch, and you know, but he's holding that whip, and it couldn't get nastier.
It's just...
Because no matter where you put that, he couldn't stand up, so when he fell down, his legs were spread apart, sticking up in the air, and he's got a whip, no matter what. You stick him on the horse, he still looks awkward.
So, Cole, what are your final thoughts here?
Follow that.
I think this is right. One of those things that borders on brilliant when done right.
Right.
If not just being downright brilliant. But the biggest pitfall, the biggest trap that I think publishers run into is to try too hard to ride the success. Mm. So you get a gem, and then all of a sudden that's flavor of the month. And the problem with flavor of the month is it gets to be a bit tiresome into like the 30th and 31st day of the month.
Right.
And that's what happens all too often is that it's just like, okay, we've got a bankable audience draw. And that's all that matters. You may now begin phoning it in.
It's a really good way to explore areas of a character that you aren't able to explore. Take a character out of the normal, you know, what passes as day-to-day humdrum life of Batman, I guess. It's a weird thing to say, but, you know.
At the point where Batman's life centers around alternately fighting crime, checking the crime computer back at the Batcave, and driving through at Taco Bell.
You need something different.
Yeah.
You got to throw him a bone. I agree with you. I couldn't have said it better myself.
Snaggletooth Hunchback just isn't enough anymore.
He's not good enough company.
You know what I think is missing that they should have really done is they really should have come forward and started an Elseworlds monthly series like the What Does and What Ifs and things like that, but really tried to tell really good stories instead of just random, you know, one-offs. You know, they could have easily taken tons of these stories of Batman and Houdini and Batman and Tarzan and whatever, and created some story arcs in a series that actually could work.
I agree.
You know, and it instead of trying to give you one book that's 75 pages of you struggling just wanting to see Batman on that horse, you know, you could sell multiple issues of the same story arc, and if you don't like it, people will still come back because who's going to be the next creative team? What's going to be that next story?
Yeah.
And just like a regular series, you'll have it hits and misses, but as a whole, people could still dig it and justify it.
Right.
I agree. As opposed to paying $12 for a book that might be pretty bad and everything about it tells you it's going to be.
All right. We're going to wrap her up. This is gone. We've gone long, but I appreciate the longness that we've gone.
Absolutely. I don't even know how to comment on that.
You shouldn't. Bobby, do you have any plugs for us?
I have my normal website, thelaststopcomic.com. I'm not doing that comic so much anymore, but there's 6 years worth of strips that people can check out and read, and if they like them, they can try to force me to do it. Not that it'll help. And I also do been forced into some manual labor by Cole, working on the You Are Here cartoons for the and me and Cole are working on some super secret stuff that hopefully will be getting closer to.
We're hoping to roll something fun out at AllCon.
and we're working on something for AllCon as well as a couple of books that we hopefully can get put together this year at some point. And I also co-host the What'd You Think with Miss Jedi Cole, Catherine Cat Fiction, whatever she's called this week.
So mysterious.
Check it out, and I guess that's pretty much it. But I'll be at Space City Con this weekend if you want to come out.
There you go. Go see Bobby. By then it'll be past Bobby.
I know, but it'd be funny for them to drive around.
Cole, what do you got for
those of you who missed Space City Con, but you would like to go to conventions in Texas that haven't happened yet, visit the Convention Awareness Project Texas.
And I'll be at every single one of them. Good luck.
At conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com. Bobby is aforementioned What'd You Think? And You Are Here, which is part of JCU Sunday Funnies. This show, lots of other cool shows, including some upcoming new editions of Who Do You Love? Can be found at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. And nice. Andrew, myself, the aforementioned Mrs. Jedi Cole of the multiple names, Rick Gutierrez, sometimes Bobby, sometimes dozens of other mysterious people, can be found at the United States of Geekdom at UnitedStatesOfGeekdom.com.
And don't forget, guys, we're trying to get you guys to participate a little more and get you on the show. So if you have any show ideas, especially if you have any comic book coincidences, if anything's happened to you that you would like to talk about that revolves around comic books, feel free to hit us up on Facebook at the Hey Kids Comics page. Or Cole, what's the email address?
That is jcumail@yahoo.com.
So hit up jcumail@yahoo.com. As always, buy, collect, and enjoy your comic books, especially when they take you out of the status quo and really make you think about what makes your characters tick. That's what we're all about here, and that's what we want you guys to do to enjoy your comics. So until next week, when we talk about what, Cole?
We are going to go back. We have more of this story arc, of course. We're rethinking the legends. This changes everything.
All right.
What is this rather about? What we kind of touched on a little bit, where, you know, your Elseworlds type of things become part of the continuity, where, you know, retooling, your relaunches, your...
It's basically
do-overs.
It's basically a show about the new 52. See you next week.
All right, right. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-bop.
52.
All right, guys. Until next week, we'll talk to you then. Thank you again, Bobby, for coming out and joining us tonight. It's always
a
pleasure, man.
My pleasure, as always.
All right. Good night, everybody.